Hey everyone, this is Yannick Silver, and I'm really excited for another Maverick Business Insider interview. I got with me one of my buddies, Drew Kossoff, Drew Clutch Kossoff, and I'll talk about that in a second. So I've known Drew for, Drew, how many years has it been now? Like eight, maybe? Seven?
Could be, yeah, probably.
It's been a while. I first met Drew through Evan, but maybe it might have been, I think it's the reverse.
I think it's through Craig Clemens, actually.
Okay, yeah, so Craig Clemens, part of, used to be through the Evan Pagan circle, and then Drew was really one of the guys responsible for driving Evan's business to beyond pay-per-click and really buying just general advertising and really blowing up what they were doing in the dating space. And then since that time, he's gone on and does media buying for a whole host of kind of who's who of internet marketers. And that's kind of where we wanted to focus on today. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity for people to get beyond maybe some of the traditional places where they can advertise or they originally think about, whether it's just pay-per-click or possibly now Facebook advertising, and really get into a spot where not many people, you know, kind of understand it, but it's something that can really blow up their business if they do it right. So, Drew, can you give a little bit of a background on yourself, if you can, and then we'll get into that.
Sure. So I actually have been doing online marketing for 20 years now.
Wow.
It started way back when in 1991, the summer of 91, where I did a professional residency at Prodigy, which back then was the internet. It was Prodigy, AOL, and CompuServe were the three sort of online services before sort of the free web existed. That was the early days of online direct marketing, and I was really interested in and excited about, you know, the internet and online marketing, and have been doing it ever since. And that was when I was getting my master's degree in direct marketing at the time, and I just saw the applications for direct marketing, which, you know, previously were more, you know, direct mail and catalogs and sort of you know, offline media, and I saw the potential for online very early, and pursued it, and here I am 20 years later, you know, a primarily direct response advertising guy. Most, you know, there's sort of two sides of the coin with advertising. There's branding, which are sort of the big corporate clients that aren't necessarily on their media spend, and then there's the rest of us sort of in our world where you're trying to sell something and make a return, and that's where I mostly focus. And over the years, I've you know, worked with Evan Pagan and helped him grow his business to the $20 million a year level and beyond, and, you know, a whole host of other businesses of my own and of clients that have grown to the seven-figure level, and primarily through media buying and traffic generation. So,
you know, the way I always look at it is that, you know, there's push and pull kind of advertising, right? So, so pull is kind of pay-per-click, where somebody types in, you know, I'm looking for, I don't know, volleyball lessons, right? So then you'll advertise on there if you have volleyball training or lessons for sale. But at the same time, there's a whole host of sites where people can, who volleyball players probably congregate, and they may or may not be looking for volleyball lessons at that time, but if you threw up a banner or a text link or, you know, some of the other ways that you've integrated media buying, then they might be like, oh, yeah, I am interested in getting training on, you know, playing better volleyball. So that's the push strategy.
That's correct. I think of it a little bit differently, or maybe I sort of speak in terms that maybe anyone who's done some pay-per-click would be familiar with, and that's, in my mind, one is search, where someone's searching for something, they're actively seeking, you know, I want volleyball lessons or volleyball, you know, equipment.
Right.
And the other person happens to be a volleyball player, but they're not searching for it. They just happen to be on a volleyball blog or a volleyball site, and they, you know, and it's more like interruption marketing, where they're doing something else, but they've, you know, that they're your, you know, the right demographic or the right target, and you're trying to persuade them or interrupt them from what they're doing to click on your banner or your text link or your, you know, whatever your messaging is. You could, you know, you could even be inside email.
Right.
To get them to over to your site and your offer and get them into your funnel.
Right, and then even probably a more advanced, and maybe we'll jump into that, is at some point, is not only just the volleyball blogs where, you know, they congregate, but you've figured out almost I don't know, places that they might be, even though it's not a typical spot. So you're
100% accurate. That's sort of the in fact, that's kind of the area that I really specialize in. Over the last couple of years, I've really realized my whole philosophy is if you don't have a competitive advantage, don't compete. That comes from Jack Welch of GE. That's sort of one of his quotes that I live by. And you know, it's very competitive to advertise in certain spaces. Search is very competitive, but where there's really big opportunities is what I call lateral marketing, where you're right, that you can find your audience in places that have nothing to do with volleyball, for example. There maybe volleyball players are also swimmers, or volleyball players like to travel to certain destinations. You might be able to find volleyball players on a travel site or on a bathing suit site or whatever it is.
Right.
And finding those lateral sites where you can convert the customers very often are much cheaper than to buy advertising on. There's a lot of competition on the keywords and the search for a certain category, but there's not as much competition in a lateral site, and because it maybe isn't in that niche, it can very often be far less costly. So even if the conversion's not as good, if the price per click is 15 cents instead of 70 cents, even if you're only getting a 5% opt-in rate instead of a 15 or whatever the numbers your business require, you can often still be profitable. And there's going lateral is just this huge opportunity for growing a business beyond just within your niche.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think you told me, what I mentioned at the beginning was Drew Clutch cuss off was because you were on the very first Maverick Business Adventures trip that we went Baja off-road racing, and I don't think you drove Clutch for maybe 10 years before that. And so we were giving you a hard time, especially on the hills where you were where there might be one or two stalls, and everyone was enjoying that. But one of the things that I remember you talked about to the group was I'm pretty sure you mentioned it there, or I've heard you say it before, is that all media is good media, depending on how much you buy it for.
Yeah, I mean, true. If you're looking at an ROI, it doesn't matter what high-quality, very targeted traffic source could be very expensive but could work. Similarly, a very cheap, low-quality traffic source could work as long as it's hitting your profit margins that you require. And it really doesn't matter. And I have... I've got clients they're really successful clients where I'm scaling them, in many directions, from pay-per-click, display media, email traffic. The conversions vary significantly, depending on the media, and the prices vary significantly, but ultimately it's the bottom line that matters. So, you don't just look at a metric and go, "Oh, the opt-in rate is poor. It's not working." It's what's the bottom line? And in order to know the bottom line, tracking is really, really important. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges a lot of people have, is they don't have visibility, they don't have the right tracking in place, so they don't really know what a customer's worth to them. And if you can't track that all the way through the back end, then you're just guessing. And there's plenty of people who've grown big businesses without using a fudge factor, but the better your tracking is and your analytics are, the more successful you're going to be at media buying, because ultimately that's how you optimize. You pull the levers by saying what's working, what are the hot spots or sweet spots, and turn those up, and you definitely want to be turning off or turning down the ones that aren't working. That's how sort of bid management works. And it's almost like, I know a guy who's a commodities trader, and he said that the biggest thing that people lose most of their money on is the downside, not the upside. It's not about how much money you make; it's about how reducing your losses, and focusing on getting those things turned off, stop losses as quickly as possible, because you can lose your shirt, and it's so much harder to get it back than it is to just make small profit margins. And I think it's the same with advertising. The real sweet spots come, or the real profit comes, when you're able to look at your campaigns and go, "Oh, wow! One particular site or one particular keyword or whatever it is spending a ton of money and it's losing a huge amount. We need to turn that off." And boom! Now you're all of a sudden the campaign is profitable. And if you don't have visibility into that, you're just flying blind, and you're not looking at the numbers the way you need to. Because a lot of times, it's just incremental changes that make the big difference between profit and loss.
That's a great, great example. Let's talk about maybe, you know, without revealing names or industries, but I think, you know, I love hearing kind of how you scale up a business.
Okay.
And actually, maybe before we do that, what businesses or what marketplaces do you think work best for, you know, what you do or buying media in, you know, in a higher quantity than just the ceiling that's available in period?
Good question, because, you know, it's interesting. One of my early businesses that I actually started with Evan Pagan was in the wedding niche.
Yeah.
And one of the challenges we had was at wedding, it's a very small niche, even though there's a big market and it's a $1 billion industry. It's, you know, there's only 2 million weddings a year in the U.S., and you can't do mass marketing because, you know, in any given pool of people, it's only a small percentage of them that are engaged in planning a wedding.
Right.
Versus something like a diet product or a business opportunity product or, you know, any number of products that have more of a mass market, those are the ones that have the biggest opportunity to scale because you can do both the, you know, targeted advertising as well as broad advertising and often reach people almost anywhere, you know, not almost anywhere, but, you know, in a lot of places that have nothing to do with that niche, and that's where you can really scale. So
if I have what would be considered a niche product, is it, you said there are still opportunities, but it's just not as broad. Like, you know, maybe the wedding one's a good example because, like you said, there's only a certain amount of women who are ever interested in weddings because their radar's up to that because they're having a wedding, but otherwise.
Yeah, so it's like you can't do a general consumer email blast or you can't advertise on, you know, on a news site, you know, or something that's just sort of broad. Whereas you could advertise a diet product on a news site. You could advertise, you know, how to make money product on a news site. You could advertise a whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of things, teeth whitening and things that sort of apply to everybody. Everybody would like white teeth. Everybody would like to be skinny. Everybody would like to make more money. So those kind of products can have much, much more scalable opportunities from an advertiser.
So those are the ones that you look for right now if you're going to...
Those are those are the opportunities that we have the ability to help, you know, help clients scale. And then so speaking of sort of scaling, you know, there are many different ways to do it. If you've got endless amounts of money, you can, you know, sort of go big very fast. But typically, most people, even people who get direct response, who have the tracking, who want to grow fast, they don't want to lose a ton of money, and it requires some investment. Or, you know, to figure out what's going to work. You don't make money day one with media. You make an investment, you know, and like I said, cut out the fat and then focus on what's working. And so typically, you know, we'll start out in the most targeted places. Obviously, pay-per-click and Google are fantastic, you know, high-volume traffic sources with very good traffic and very good tracking. But then, you know, I think a lot of people, are, you know, that's all they do. I mean, 5 years ago when I spoke at Underground, I was talking about most people, you know, either all they do is pay-per-click or, you know, the majority of their media buying is pay-per-click. And there is, you know, you're leaving so much on the table or off the table if you're not looking at other traffic sources. And so, you know, in a typical model where we're scaling people, we'll start with some very targeted stuff, and once we know that's working and we understand the metrics of the business, and they've tweaked the landing pages and the offer, and if, you know, we feel like we've got the right offer, we can then, you know, sort of just, you know, every month add another traffic source, do another test, keep scaling, and a year down the road, all of a sudden, maybe we've tried 15 or 20 sources and maybe only 10 or 12 worked, but now you've got 10 different traffic sources and you're diversified and you have a solid, in a portfolio of traffic sources, so that if you get slapped by Google or you have, you know, something goes wrong with one source, you're not, your business isn't dead. You've got, you know, 9 others that are still working. And you know, I've had clients, you know, for example, you asked me, I'm not going to name the client or the niche,
yeah,
but you know, one client that we went from spending, you know, 6 figures a month to multiple 6 figures a month, and, you know, grew the business to $1 million a month in revenue, you know, just primarily through, you know, media buying and building a big list. And and, you know, when I started working with them, they were only doing pay-per-click on Google, and when we were finished, or not finished, we're still working together, it, you know, we had many, many different traffic sources. And like we talked about earlier, converting at very different, you know, at different conversion rates, different sources have, you know, have different metrics, but ultimately, as long as they work, you know, then it's a good thing. So
Maybe kind of take it step by step. So pay-per-click is probably the first source, and a lot of people have been using that. Where's the next spot that you typically
look at? Well, so, and I guess we shouldn't even define it just as pay-per-click. I mean, because there's actually different, you know, you can buy media on a CPM, CPA, CPC, and again, that doesn't even matter either. As long as the metrics work, I've got all, you know, I do all of the above. It just depends, mm-hmm. you know, how, you know, a lot of the people who do high-volume media buying buy CPMs, and which is more risk, but if you're doing a lot of testing and you have the ability to test, you know, dozens and dozens of banners and test the offers and test the pages a lot, you can actually end up getting, you know, a lower cost per click with a CPM buy than you can buying pay-per-click. So,
and define CPM for people.
So with a CPM, you're paying for every 1,000 times your ad shows up, for, you know, per 1,000 impressions, they call it. And those, you pay whether anyone clicks or buys or opts in regardless. If they display your ad 1,000 times, you're paying, you know, whatever. If it's a dollar CPM, then you're paying a dollar every time they show your ad 1,000 times. And so all the risk is on your side. You know, with pay-per-click, they could, you know, Google might have to show your ad 10,000 times to get someone to click, but you don't pay for the 10,000 impressions. You just pay for the one click. So there's less risk. You're only paying for an action. You know, then moving down the line, you can also do deals where you're paying for not just a click, but you're actually paying for an opt-in or paying for a sale. And so maybe you're paying, you know, 50 cents a click on a CPC, but maybe you can buy you can pay $3 a lead for an opt-in, or you can pay $40 a sale for a sale. And there's various different ways to negotiate those kind of deals with different partners. And so the more you can take the risk away from you and put it onto the publishers, it's usually better for clients. But again, if you've got the ability, to pull the levers and really do a lot of testing, then sometimes it's worth the risk to keep it on your side.
Got it.
So sorry. So going back to traffic sources, I mean, the big ones right now are Google, still Google, and of course Facebook has come out of nowhere to be, you know, a huge traffic source. 5 years ago you couldn't advertise on Facebook,
right?
And today it's it's as much volume as Google in most cases. And their targeting is fantastic on Facebook, but Google and Facebook are also very different animals. Facebook, because it's a membership site, and they don't want you showing the same ads over and over and over again to the same people. They deliberately fatigue your ads, and so over time, your ads will not get the same results, and you have to basically refresh them and reinvent your campaigns over and over and over again to keep your traffic consistent. Whereas with Google, once you kind of optimize and get a campaign working, you can kind of expect similar, you know, traffic day in and day out for, you know, with just maintenance, as opposed to Facebook. It's just a constant reinvention, and so it's a bit more work. And ultimately, media buying is not rocket science. You know, anybody listening to this, or reading this, this interview, can do the Facebook and Google stuff on their own. But it ultimately, scaling to the big levels, just you need someone focused on it, 24/7, looking at the numbers every day. And it's just a lot of it's a lot of time and energy to keep it on track. And so I think when doing a little bit on your own to start your business out is, not a big deal, but when you really want to get to the next level, unless you want to do it full-time, all day long, it's probably better to have someone like me who can sort of manage it for you. And so then going beyond pay-per-click, and sort of self-service platforms where you kind of log in and manage it yourself, there's the opposite extreme is going to the big ad networks and letting them sort of manage it for you, kind of managed accounts, and we're talking big dollars where you have to spend anywhere from $10,000 to $25,000 just to do a test, just to see if it's going to work. And then once you've sort of gotten proof of concept, you can scale beyond that. But most people are not willing to spend $10,000-$20,000 just to see if it's going to work.
Right.
And so that's sort of the next level. And then everywhere in between, you can do individual buys with directly with websites. You can buy on the ad networks. You can buy on various platforms. You can buy PPV. You can buy email. And you don't need to do all the above. And it really just depends on the industry you're in and the niches you're in and where the right target sites are. But there's endless amounts of media beyond Google, and it's definitely worthwhile pursuing more than one traffic source and diversifying.